her back, runs one finger along my cheekbone. "You okay, Lainey girl?"
"I think so," I say.
My head took a couple of good whacks. I tilt my face away from his hand. "She killed Allegra." My granddad goes completely still, his hand frozen in midair. Over his shoulder, Gran has heaved herself to her feet, one hand braced on the edge of the kitchen table.
"Is it true?"
he asks, eyes on me.
"Yates,"
Gran says.
"Is it true?"
"Yes," Gran says on a whisper. My granddad sinks down to the floor, landing heavily next to me. He buries his face in his hands, his shoulders slump. I hate that my first instinct is to comfort him.
"I'm sorry,"
Gran says, moving closer. Tears trickle down her cheeks.
"I couldn't do it anymore, Yates. Not again. Please, forgive me."
She kneels next to him, loops her arms around his neck, and leans her forehead against the side of his head.
"Forgive me."
I push away from the wall, desperate to get some distance from both of them. I use one of the kitchen chairs to pull myself to standing. I hear the cicadas from outside, worked up into a frenzy, so loud it makes my ears ache. I look back at my grandparents, still tangled together on the floor. My granddad has uncovered his eyes, wrapped one arm around Gran's back. His gaze finds mine, captures, and locks. "I wanted it to be you," I tell him. The cicadas scream. I rip my eyes away and limp out into the hallway to call Tommy.
Lillian, born 1951. She played it over and over in her head, like a movie on the nights he didn't come to their bed, the nights he spent with one of them. In the movie version of her memory, she was as gorgeous as a movie star. A young Grace Kelly, perhaps. The truth wasn't far off, really. She'd always been lovely. Still was, even now that time had begun to do its worst to her. She remembered turning in the hotel lobby. It hadn't happened in slow motion, naturally, but it played that way inside her head. And he was standing there, one elbow perched on the marble check-in counter, his eyes trailing over her head to toe. He smiled, and her whole body flushed with prickly warmth, her stomach transformed into a seething coil of snakes, and the lace between her legs soaked through. It was the first time in her life she could recall feeling something beyond polite interest, familial obligation. She'd grown used to her mother's sharp elbow in her side, the hissed reminders to smile when they ran into eligible bachelors at the country club. She lived always with the memory of the day she'd overheard her father and a cluster of his golf buddies on the veranda discussing what a pretty girl Lillian had grown into. Her father's deep, dismissive laugh. Too bad a face like that is wasted on such a cold fish. It was true, she'd never been a girl of strong emotion, but she didn't know how to be any different. She watched other girls her own age, with their flirting and bell-peel giggles, and wondered what reservoir of feeling they possessed that she was unable to find within herself. Nothing made her heart race or her stomach flip. Nothing excited her. Until the stranger in the hotel lobby. He kindled something inside her with a single look, a flame that once discovered she was loath to extinguish, curious to see how hot it might burn. So she smiled back, let him take her to dinner over her mother's protests, and a few days later, to the courthouse over her father's. And after that first dinner, she let him lead her up to his hotel room and peel off her clothes. She'd always assumed sex was something to be tolerated, counting down the minutes until it was over. Cold fish. But sex with Yates was all fire and mad, wild hunger. Every touch of his hands was like a magician's scarf trick, pulling more and more feeling from her unresisting flesh. Anything he wanted, she was willing to give him. Just please God, let it keep going, let it never end. Afterward, they sprawled across the bed, breathless and sweaty, and Lillian laughed and laughed, limbs so light she felt effervescent, only his big, warm hand on her belly keeping her tethered to earth. The next morning, she told her parents that she loved him. He was the one she wanted. They tried to talk her out of it, first with reason and then with threats. She knew her happiness was only a secondary concern. What they really cared about was her ability to snag some stuffed shirt Boston blue blood, whose old family money and connections would help to prop up their own. Her father warned her she'd regret it. Her mother wept and said she couldn't believe Lillian was throwing away her whole life. She couldn't actually be willing to move to some farm in godforsaken Kansas for a man.
I'd do anything for him, Lillian told her mother, felt the truth of the words and the tenderness at the juncture of her thighs, the hot rush of joy when she thought of him. Anything. Her mother looked up then, and Lillian turned, saw Yates watching them from the doorway, his eyes sparking with possessive pride. He proposed that very day. They married before the week was over. She became the wife of a man who adored her, lavished her with gifts, made her moan in bed, and laugh outside of it. He was perfect, and she thought their life would be too. But like everyone the world over, he had a flaw. Except his wasn't a penchant for fights, or a tendency to drink. Nothing that easy. His flaw devastated her, tore open her chest, and scoured her heart raw. Oh, she thought about leaving him at first, when it was only Sophia and Penelope, and Eleanor still a bump under her dress. She told herself she stayed because she had no family to go back to. True to their word, they'd washed their hands of her before the ink dried on the marriage license. She could have left anyway, but she had no money, and knew herself well enough to know she couldn't survive without it. She'd put up with almost anything to avoid a low-paying job, some dirty apartment, thrift store clothes, and government assistance. But really, she stayed because she wanted to. Her words to her mother, "I'd do anything for him," remained true. She stayed because she didn't want to leave him. That was her flaw. So she took a page from her mother's marriage playbook, the tactic used every time Lillian's father had another in a never-ending string of dalliances. Lillian looked the other way, made a meal of the crumbs of time Yates spent with her. Never enough, always leaving her hungry for more. She consoled herself with the ring on her finger. She was his wife, the one who would never leave him. And that had to count for something. To his credit, Yates made it as easy on her as he could. He never flaunted what went on out of her eyesight, tried his best not to rub her face in it. And, as he always reminded her, he needed her.
He loved her. But he didn't love only her. She outlasted needy Sophia and stupid, careless Penelope. She gave birth to daughters and understood from the second she held them that she was never meant to be a mother. She looked into their scrunched faces, stroked their downy heads, and felt nothing beyond a pale kind of duty. Except for Emmeline. For some reason, the smell of her skin, perhaps, or the way her mouth twisted to the side before she cried, she managed to extract at least a hint of maternal instinct from Lillian. Enough that Lillian couldn't stand to watch it happen. Couldn't bear the thought of Emmeline breaking her own mother's heart. Occasionally, she wondered which came first. Her lack of feeling for her girls, or the knowledge she was destined to hate them. Her very own chicken or the egg riddle. Sometimes, especially at the beginning, she clung to the idea that she could always leave later, if it got to be too much, gave herself an out in some distant future. But the more time passed, the more his secret became her secret too. Her burden. Because if she told, if she exposed him, she also exposed herself. And she knew who people would blame. They might gossip under their breath about Yates Roanoke, the pervert. But Lillian would be the one they'd crucify. The mother who didn't protect her children, who was too cold to love them. Never mind that the children didn't want to be protected, were complicit in their own destruction. The unfairness of it rankled. The girls had made their own choices, the same way Lillian had made hers. But no one would care about that. The shame, the fault, would land at Lillian's feet, because she was the one who birthed them. But what it boiled down to, after the excuses and explanations, was the simple fact that she loved him more than her daughters. More than her granddaughters. More than anything in the entire world. He made her come alive, still, with a smile or a tender touch. She would burn cities to the ground for him, if that's what he wanted. His precious Roanoke girls always abandoned him one way or another. But not her. She stayed. That's what it meant to love. Never letting go. Never giving up. Never giving in. And when it was all over, she would be the last one standing. The only one left for him to love. Now, I spend the night in the police station being questioned by Sheriff Mills, who can't control his facial tics every time I mention my granddad and Allegra's sexual relationship. I know they've brought my grandparents in, too, because Tommy tells me when he hands me a stale cup of coffee around 3 in the morning. Is my granddad being charged with anything? I ask. The ice pack Tommy gave me for my head has melted to lukewarm slush, and the over-the-counter painkillers aren't touching the pounding heartbeat inside my skull. Tommy can barely look at me, his eyes bouncing around the small room like pinballs.
We don't know yet. The incest stuff.
His voice breaks and he clears his throat, fist at his mouth.
With Allegra gone and no one underage still in the house. I'm not sure what they'll do with that.
Are they going to test the baby's DNA? I ask. Tommy shakes his head.
It's a moot point now. Your gran confessed, and they don't need to establish paternity to make a case against her. Everyone's assuming the baby was your granddad's anyway.
Lucky you, I say, but my voice is gentle.
Yeah.
Tommy lets out a choked sound.
Lucky me.
His usually bright eyes are dim. The skin on his face hangs slack. Allegra's death, the truth about her life, has taken something from him. The belief, maybe, that things can always be put right. Some things, it turns out, are beyond even Tommy's ability to fix.
Your granddad says he didn't know anything about Allegra's murder, and your grand says the same. But it's kind of hard to believe she could move the body herself. Any thoughts on that?
Talk to Sharon, I say. If there's anyone who would have helped Gran, it would have been her.
She knew?
He asks.
They all knew?
I nod, and Tommy's shoulders slump.
I don't understand why Allegra never said anything. Why she never left.
There's no point trying to explain it to Tommy. A boy who grew up in a house where his parents loved him, where at the end of a shitty, no good day, he could always look around the ring of faces at his dinner table and be sure of his family's love for him. That's a gift he took for granted, and one Allegra never had. One I never had either. And into that void stepped our granddad, handsome and kind and doting. He created the perfect cycle of victims, motherless, unloved, and ripe for his sick devotion. We didn't have any defense against him, especially not Allegra, who'd been with him since birth. He became the sun she revolved around, the only light in her whole world, and she couldn't bear to live in darkness, even as the shadows of her life consumed her. Tommy shakes his head.
How did I not know? All these years, and I never had a clue.
The one person I think might have had a clue picks me up at the police station at dawn, the sun just beginning its peach-colored ascent into the hazy morning sky.
Hey,
Cooper says, as I sink into the passenger side of his truck.
Rough night.
It's not a question, so I don't bother answering. Thanks for picking me up.
Anytime.
I turn my head without lifting it from the headrest and smile at him through wobbly lips. His fingers glide through my hair, the backs of them feather down my cheek.
You did good, Lane.
He makes no move to put the truck in gear. Did you know? I ask. Back then?
No,
he says.
Not for sure. My dad had heard a few rumors. Small town bullshit. I thought, for a long time, it was sour grapes. People jealous because your granddad was so rich. But you left and liquor got worse and worse.
His hand falls away and he looks out the windshield. A muscle works in his jaw.
I should have said something. Done something.
Don't, I say. She wouldn't have left him. No matter what you said or who you told.
So just don't.
Cooper keeps his eyes straight ahead. The tips of his eyelashes glow gold in the gentle sunlight.
Did he ever? With you?
I close my eyes. Sometimes when I'm tired or my defenses are down, I can still feel the touch of my granddad's lips on mine, the rough rasp of his stubble and the taste of his tongue. It's not even close to what happened to Allegra or my own mother. But it's enough. Not what you're thinking, I say eventually when the sun hits my neck. Pushes the words out of my throat with warm fingers. He kissed me once. That's all.
But I let him. I let him.
The admission hangs in the silence between us, and I don't open my eyes.
Can't bear it if Cooper's mouth is tight with disgust or his eyes dark with disdain.
Cooper's hand finds mine on the seat between us. His thumb rubs against my palm.
You didn't let him, Lane. You were a kid, and he was your granddad. It's on him. None of it was your fault.
My breath shudders out of me, and Cooper leans over, whispers it again, right in the tender shell of my ear.
It wasn't your fault.
I grab onto him blindly, fingers scrabbling against his shirt. I bury my face in his neck and hold on tight.
I'm not leaving you here.
What about my car?
Fuck your car,
Cooper says.
Tommy and I will come back and get it later, or you can follow me once you're done. But no way am I driving away from here without you.
Okay, I say. Do you want to come in?
Cooper rounds the end of his truck and sits down on the front steps of Roanoke.
I'll wait here. If I see him, I might kill him. This is probably safer.
The house echoes when I step inside, all the life force drained away. I walk on careful feet up the front stairs and down the hall to my room. I pack everything back into my mother's old suitcase, the same one I brought to Roanoke all those years ago and took away with me again when I fled. I double-check to make sure I have the pictures from the frame in Allegra's room. On my way back out the bedroom door, I take a moment, knowing I will never return to this house again. No matter what else happened inside these walls, this was a good room, with its gauzy white curtains and crisp, clean linens. I was happy here, for a very short while, a long time ago. I grab my suitcase and start down the hall, anxious to be gone.
Lane?
I pause, slowly turn toward the sound of my granddad's voice. He's in the doorway leading up to Allegra's room, one hand against the door jamb as if for balance. I wonder if he's been keeping vigil up there, mourning Allegra. The idea of it eats away at me, the same way the thought of him standing over my mother's grave chafes. He shouldn't be allowed to mourn, not when he's the cause of all the grief.
I'm leaving, I tell him.
Cooper's waiting for me downstairs. He nods, his face drawn, eyes sorrow heavy.
They arrested your gran.
They should have arrested you, too.
What for?
He asks, genuinely puzzled.
All I ever wanted was for you girls to be happy, to do right by all of you.
Well, you did a shitty job. I drop my suitcase with a hard bang. You're the reason so many of them are dead. Sophia, my mom, Allegra, Emmeline, probably Penelope, too. You ruined us all. Even Gran.
That's not true. I love you girls. More than you know.
That's the part that kills me, I tell him. The thing that keeps me up at night. I think you do love us. Love me. And you're the only person who ever has. My voice breaks and I look away.
Do you know what it's like, living with that?
From downstairs I hear footsteps, and I know Cooper is at the base of the stairs, listening, waiting, making sure I'm safe.
I never stopped missing you after you left, my granddad says. Of all of them, you
were the one I couldn't let go of. Never did get you out from under my skin.
The floor creaks, and I know he's taken a step closer to me. My skin ripples with dread.
You could stay,
he says, hope threading through his voice.
We could still make it work. You and me.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry, whether to slap his face or run away screaming. I turn my head and meet his eyes. All I've ever wanted is to get away from here. I'm not staying. He takes the final step separating us, only a few inches left between our bodies.
Then why did you come back, Lane?
He asks, so quiet I have to lean forward to hear him. For Allegra, I say. But my voice doesn't sound as strong as it did only a moment ago. My granddad shakes his head, brings one hand up, and yanks lightly on the end of my ponytail. I feel the contact all the way to my toes.
Allegra is gone. But you're still here. There's a reason for that. You know there is.
His voice is soft, sliding over me like warm sunshine, like mornings in the barn, like a promise of the future. Run, Lane. I hear the words clearly, as if Allegra is standing right next to me, shouting them into my ear. Run, Lane. I look up at my granddad, the warmth in his eyes. It would be so easy to give in to this life he's made for me. No more being alone, no more worrying about money or what to do next, no more thinking about anything at all. He will love me forever, if I let him. But his love kills from the inside out, chews through girls and spits them out, already hungry again. Over and over. It never ends. Because as much as he loves us, he loves himself most of all. Each one of us, a reflection of his own bloated ego. Every time he calls us special, every time we smile at him, offer him our bodies and our devotion, we prove how powerful he is, reinforce how much he deserves what he's been given. Allegra may have carved Gran's name into the carousel horse, but her vanity table warning was always about him. Gran was the one to take Allegra's life, the one who tried to end mine with a shard of jagged glass. But she has never been the real danger inside these walls. The real danger has always lived in my granddad's kind voice, his soft caresses. All of it, masquerading as innocent, but really, just a gateway drug for girls starved for affection, desperate for someone to love them. He doesn't force us with a heavy hand. He manipulates with a gentle touch, guides us exactly where he wants us to go. So in the end, we blame only ourselves. I wrench away from him. There is nothing that will ever make me stay here with you. I won't be one of your Roanoke girls. I pick up my suitcase and my granddad staggers forward.
What do I do now?
He asks, voice plaintive. He is such a child underneath all his alpha male bravado. A selfish child who thinks everything in the whole wide world is meant for him. I shrug, head for the stairs. I have no idea. I guess you find a way to live with yourself, the same as all the rest of us. At the bottom of the stairs, Cooper takes my suitcase and follows me out to his truck. The front yard is quiet. No noises from the barn, either. If he hasn't already, I hope Charlie will take this opportunity to leave, get out from under my granddad's control. It is better to be rootless and alone than caged in here. I've lived that lesson. I know it's hard truth. Do you have something sharp? I ask Cooper. Like a knife? He raises his eyebrows at me, but produces a scuffed pocket knife from his glove compartment without question. I pull out the blade and work it into the top porch step, dragging the pointed end along the wood. Dig in deep. Free. When I'm done, I slide the blade back into the case and close my eyes. Say a little prayer for Allegra. Ask for her forgiveness.
I'm sorry. I love you, I tell her. It's over.
When we drive away, I twist on the seat to look out the dust-streaked back window. Roanoke rises up against the blue sky, clouds pillowing above its high roof. The house looks bigger than ever, cavernous and strange. I imagine my granddad roaming the endless halls and echoing rooms, spending the rest of his days longing for a glimpse of all his vanished girls. I'd rather him be in Roanoke than in prison somewhere, if given the choice. It seems more fitting. A lost and broken king, alone in his empty castle. Later, on Cooper's back deck, a cold beer in my hand and the night sky sprawled above me. The tears come. This time he doesn't hold me. Just sits next to me and lets the warmth of his forearm against mine ground me. The trill of night insects and deep thrum of a bullfrog soothe me instead of murmured words. I wish there was some way to wash it all away, I say. Clean slate? I already know that's not possible. I tried once before, when I ran to California. The ocean was colder than I expected, sandy and rough, and its wet caress didn't change a damn thing.
I don't think it works that way, Cooper says, echoing my thoughts. I wish it did. But I think all the shitty stuff stays with you, like my dad's stayed with me. You just find ways to maneuver around it.
I'm not sure I know how, I say, while the tears slip down my cheeks. I've gone from a woman who never cries to one who can't turn off the waterworks, my tear ducts making up for lost time.
Sure you do. You've kept going all these years, right?
I shake my head.
Not well. I think you did the best you could, Lane. About Allegra. About a lot of things.
I know, without him having to say it, that he's talking about the baby. She is the invisible point in the triangle that is Cooper and me.
I'm sorry about the baby, I whisper.
I've never been good with apologies, and this makes two in one day. There's something freeing in saying the words.
I know you are, Cooper says. And I'm not trying to make you feel guilty or worse. But I wish I could have held her. Just once.
I look up at the stars again, swear I can feel their cool light cutting through the hot night air.
She was beautiful.
She looked exactly like you. Nothing like me. That's the first thing I checked after she was born, whether she looked like a Roanoke girl. And I remember staring at her tiny face and thinking,
thank God. Thank God.
If it helps, I think you did the right thing. We were kids, screwed up kids, You got her away from here. From him. You gave her a chance.
Cooper shifts in his chair, and his shoulder bumps against mine.
I heard you today. When you said your granddad was the only person who ever loved you. That's not true, you know.
I turn my tear-drenched face to his, find him already watching me.
Other people have loved you. Still love you. Your mother, Allegra.
His warm fingers slide between mine.
Me?
I wonder when Cooper got so strong. Strong enough he'll risk saying words I could easily throw back at him like knives. He knows me, how awful I'm capable of being. And he trusts me anyway. For the first time, the changes in Cooper give me something akin to hope. Hope that I can be more than the sum of all my miserable parts. The breath I take feels like it's burning all the way down. The hand I raise to smooth back his hair trembles. I could hurt him now, and he might still forgive me. But I wouldn't forgive myself. Not this time. Not again. Not for taking something good. The one good thing I've finally found in this fucked up world, and twisting it into something ugly. Enough things turn to shit all on their own without me adding to the pile. That morning in your kitchen, when I was such a bitch, I say, speaking around a mouthful of tears. My heart is trying to push its way out of my chest, battering against bone, and I grab harder onto Cooper's hand to steady myself. I tell myself if he can be brave, so can I.
Yeah?
Can we try that again? Cooper nods, a smile winking at the corners of his mouth.
We could start over,
he says, the same words he spoke in his kitchen.
Couldn't we?
I thought there were no clean slates, I remind him.
Not a clean slate.
He grips the back of my neck with a firm hand that still somehow feels gentle.
A second chance.
Before his mouth reaches mine, I stop him with a hand against his chest.
I'm going to fuck this up sometimes,
I say. He doesn't hesitate.
I think that's pretty much a given. For both of us.
His kiss doesn't erase the ache inside of me. It doesn't miraculously heal me, make everything all right. But it's a start. A damn good start. I help Cooper load the last box into the back of the U-Haul trailer and slam the door. That's it?
Yep.
He smiles at me and I smile back.
Ready?
I nod and climb into the truck. Punk, already inside, greets me with a face full of doggy breath and a juicy kiss. I watch as Cooper locks his front door, slips the key back through the mail slot. Once he's behind the wheel, he looks at me over the top of Punk's head. Anticipation curls in my stomach, stretches out into my limbs, and pulses at the tips of my fingers. I'm not used to this feeling, of looking forward to what comes next. So, where to? Cooper's decision to sell the garage, pick up stakes, and leave Osage Flats with me came fast. But we've never actually decided on our final destination. Somewhere other than here, somewhere new to both of us, is as far as we've gotten.
West?
Cooper says.
East? North? South?
Those are all the directions, I say, and squirm away when he flicks my thigh. I lean back in my seat with a smile. Surprise me. A grin stretches across Cooper's face.
Yeah?
Yeah. I look over at him. God knows it won't be the first time. Cooper laughs, puts the truck in gear, and pulls out onto the highway. I close my eyes. I don't need to know which direction we're going, or where we might end up. It's enough to know I'm leaving Roanoke behind for good. Although, part of it will always be with me, in the memory of Allegra's smile, my mother's tears, my granddad's fierce and unspeakable love. In the faces of all the Roanoke girls I see, every time I look in a mirror. But this time, I'm not running. I know running doesn't get you anywhere. You can't outrun what's inside of you. You can only acknowledge it, work around it, try to turn it into something better. I may not know exactly where I'm headed, but this time, I'm choosing my own destiny. I stick my arm out of the open window and ride the warm breeze with my outstretched hand.
This is Brittany Presley. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of The Roanoke Girls by Amy Engel. This program was directed by Simone Barros, executive producer Karen Jakonski. Text copyright 2017 by Amy Engel. Production copyright 2017 Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.